Hello, it's time to read the Des Moines Register for Friday, February 23rd, 2024. All material heard on IRIS is intended solely for the use of Iowans with a print disability. I'm Dave Buzik, and my partner at the microphone for the next 90 minutes is Barb Martin. For this first hour, we'll cover local and national news from the Des Moines Register and USA Today. Our second hour starts with birthdays and obituaries, followed by opinions, sports, and lifestyle news. Then we'll wrap up our broadcast with Dear Abby. Support for today's reading comes from the Des Moines Register and donations from individuals and listeners like you. Learn how you can keep the volunteer voices of IRIS going strong at iowaradioreading.org. Now let's take a look at the weather. Outside of a few sprinkles or flurries north to northeast today, a dry weekend is in store for us. Cloud cover will gradually be on the increase north to south into this afternoon, with cooler temperatures today ranging from the upper 30s in the far north, where cloud cover will move in first, to the upper 50s in the south, where more warming will be able to occur before the clouds arrive. Breezy conditions are also expected today, with winds out of the northwest 15 to 25 miles an hour and gusts to near 30. Temperatures tonight will be chilly as skies clear out and winds decrease, with lows in the teens in northeast Iowa to the 20s elsewhere. That'll be a little bit of a shock. Temperatures will start to warm up again on Saturday with breezy winds again, but shifting to be out of the southwest. Even warmer temperatures move in to end the weekend with some near record highs possible on Monday. Here is the specific day part forecast. Partly cloudy and breezy today, high 54, winds out of the northwest around 15. Tonight, mostly clear skies, low near 25, winds west-northwest at 5 to 10. Sunny skies on Saturday, high near 55, winds out of the west at 10. Saturday night, mostly clear, low 37. Sunday, mostly sunny, high up to 63, winds out of the southwest at 10 to 15 miles an hour. And then on Monday, are you sitting down, Barb? Partly cloudy, slight chance of rain, high 72 degrees. That will be nice. Open the windows up. Winds out of the south at 10 to 15 miles an hour. Sorry, 15 to 20 miles an hour. So that is the situation with the weather. Let's take a look at the front page of today's Register.
Yes, we will start with Iowa's second highest for new cases of cancer by Brooklyn, Daisy Dreisey. Experts look at alcohol's role in the state's ranking. The other items on the front page are superintendents and the parents speak on House AEA changes, and a move to the new federal courthouse is underway. John Stokes has survived cancer twice. His treatment for voice box cancer was successful after he was diagnosed 13 years ago and is once again cancer-free after receiving surgery to recover, to remove what doctors in 2022 identified as head and neck cancer. Almost 169,000 Iowans are cancer survivors like Stokes, according to the 2024 Cancer in Iowa report, but about 6,100 are expected to die from it this year, alongside an estimated 21,000 who are diagnosed with new invasive cancers. Healthcare experts discussed the report's findings Tuesday at a news conference. Iowa once again has the second highest rate of new cancer cases in the U.S., according to the report, alongside the fastest growing rate of new cancers. The state also reports the fourth highest incidence of alcohol-related cancers in the country and the highest in the Midwest, facts which Stokes called astounding. As someone who confronted his alcoholism and quit drinking a long time ago, Stokes said it might have made a difference in his life if he knew how alcohol could contribute to the chances of developing cancer. Quote, "It's never too late to reduce your risk of alcohol-related cancers," Stokes said. "As a head and neck cancer survivor, I want to make sure that Iowans know that alcohol can cause cancer, and if you're thinking about making the move to drink less, reducing your chance of risk is a great motivation itself." Panelists at the news conference cited alcohol usage as a possible driver in Iowa's cancer rates and emphasized that there need to be policies and other efforts put in place to try and lower alcohol abuse across the board. Quote, "My main message today is to be a literal buzzkill," said Mary Carlton, director of Iowa Cancer Registry at the University of Iowa, at a news conference. "No one thing leads to developing cancer," Charlton said. "Rather, it's multiple factors coming together to impact the cells. These factors can include genetics, environment, behaviors, and more. Alcohol can contribute to these factors, and when combined with other things like tobacco use or HPV, the risks can become even greater. Alcohol can result in damage of the genetic material and cells. At the same time, it reduces your body's ability to repair that DNA, and so that's kind of a double whammy that can lead to accumulation of mutations. The accumulation of mutations that can drive cancer, says Michael Henry, interim director of the University of Iowa Holden Comprehensive Cancer Center. But even more than that, it can also cause inflammation and affect the function of our immune system. And that can actually cause cancers that have developed to be worse and have worse consequences. Risks come from how many units of alcohol are being consumed rather than what kind of alcohol is being consumed, Charlton said. And the report stated that any reduction of alcohol consumption can lead to reduced risks of developing cancer. Binge drinking poses the greatest risk, she said, and 22% of Iowans report binge drinking compared to the 17% national average. Across all demographics, including age, race, sex, income level, and more, Iowans binge drink more than the national average. Alcohol has been shown to heighten the risk of developing cancer in the esophagus, colon, and rectum, oral cavity, pharynx, and the larynx, as well as female breast cancer. According to the report, Iowa ranks in the top 10 of highest rates of new cases of oral cavity and pharyngeal esophageal, colorectal, and female breast cancers. Carlton said breast, prostate, lung, and colorectal cancers make up around half of all cancer cases in Iowa, and they top the list of expected cancers in 2024. Only 40% of adults know that alcohol consumption increases the risk of developing cancer, according to the report. According to state data, Iowans spent $446 million last year on liquor at businesses holding Class E liquor licenses, like grocery and convenience stores. That number has steadily climbed since 2012, when $255 million was spent, and $33 million already has been spent this year. The report also went over possible solutions for decreasing alcohol consumption, citing the Iowa Cancer Consortium's Iowa Cancer Plan strategies of educating the public on alcohol consumption and cancer, creating environments that reduce and prevent excessive alcohol consumption, and increasing screening and treatment for excessive alcohol use. Some ways to curb heightened drinking include controlling alcohol prices through taxes and minimum unit pricing, discouraging over-serving alcohol, encouraging better practices through laws holding businesses liable for injuries and damages caused by intoxicated patrons, and other regulatory policies. The report stated that healthcare providers also could help curb drinking by conducting screening and brief interventions in order to identify excessive drinking habits and have discussions with their patients about the risks involved and ways to make changes. Leaving it to individuals to make that choice on their own has still gotten us to the number two highest cancer rate in the country, Charlton said. I think it's definitely time to look at a population level. What are the things that we can do at a population level, whether it's policy, legislation, programming, things like that, that make it easier to make the healthy choices and harder to make the less healthy choices? David?
And we have a little breaking news coming in courtesy of KCCI's news app this morning. We'll read this short story. Des Moines shooting leaves two people dead. A Friday morning shooting on the north side of the Des Moines area has left two people dead. The Polk County Sheriff's Office began investigating a shooting in the 5100 block of Northeast 17th Street shortly before 7 a.m. Friday. Officials at the scene closed off part of Northeast 17th Street for an investigation where two shooting victims were discovered. Both victims died from their injuries. Authorities have not released the identity of either victim. The investigation remains ongoing, but the Sheriff's Office says there is no threat to the public. So if we see updates on that story, we will certainly bring them to you. Now to another story on the front page of today's Register. The move to a new federal courthouse is underway. Work is nearly complete. This story by Philip Jones of the Register. Construction of the new U.S. District Courthouse in Des Moines will be completed by March 1st, and it will be fully operational in June, according to the U.S. General Services Administration. Work on the 136,229,000-square-foot courthouse, located at 101 Locust Street, started in August 2019. It will replace the 40,000-square-foot federal courthouse at 123 East Walnut Street, which dates back to 1929. General Services Administration spokesperson Matthew Doyle said that the move from the old courthouse on the east bank of the Des Moines River to the new courthouse on the west bank started in mid-February. Doyle said a temporary certificate of occupancy is pending. There will be 9 courtrooms in the new 6-floor facility compared to 7 in the current courthouse. 4 courtrooms will serve the U.S. District Court for the Southern District of Iowa. Bankruptcy and magistrate courts will have 2 courtrooms each on the 5th floor. Other floors will house probation services, the U.S. Marshals Service, and other judicial functions. The old courthouse will be sold. Some employees work in a privately owned annex building next door to the old courthouse. The federal government will move them to the new building. The office of the U.S. Attorney for the Southern District of Iowa will move to the Neil Smith Federal Building a few blocks south of the new courthouse. The new courthouse will include numerous upgrades. The entrances to the current courthouse don't meet modern security standards. It has a single metal detector in a narrow foyer that can accommodate only one person at a time. And prospective jurors, and others who attend court must sometimes wait out in the rain or the snow to enter. In addition, the courthouse feels inaccessible to people with disabilities. Longtime federal judge John Jarvie said in April 22 after his retirement. The new courthouse entrance will be wheelchair accessible and open into a large atrium directly connected to the elevator banks. Jarvie said that we're the keepers of the Americans with Disability Act, saying that people with disabilities, quote, shouldn't feel second class when they come to the courthouse, unquote. The new courthouse also will be more secure. In the current courthouse, defendants being brought to trial walk down the same hall as jurors, crime victims, and judges. In the new building, courtrooms will have separate access. U.S. District Judge Rebecca Goodgame Ebinger said in September 2022, there are considerable upgrades in this courthouse that will make the public and the people who work in the building more secure. Despite the marked improvements over the current courthouse, construction of the new one has not been without controversy. It's situated on the former site of the downtown YMCA, a tract city leaders wanted to be used for a more marquee development that incorporated housing, retail, restaurants, or entertainment. Throughout the design process, critics contended that the fortress-like federal building would be a hulking, unwelcoming presence that would not meet the goals the city has sought in its ongoing downtown redevelopment. Since then, the city has decided to move police headquarters and offices housed in the Argon Armory building, neighbors of the current courthouse on the east side of the river, to a building purchased from Nationwide Mutual Insurance Company in the Central Business District, opening a broader swath of the riverfront there to new users.
And now something on the House AEA changes. Iowa superintendents, education workers, and parents spoke to House lawmakers about their plan to restructure the area education agencies, flocking to the Capitol for a public hearing Wednesday evening on one of the legislative session's most contentious issues. The Republican-led House File 2612 would allow schools to contract with private providers for media services and general education services, while retaining the AEAs as the sole provider of special education services. Currently, the state's 9 AEAs are the sole provider of all of those services through contracts with schools. The House's proposal is a significant rewrite of Governor Kim Reynolds' initial bill, while Senate Republicans advanced their own version. Iowans filled the committee room where the hearing took place, while a few others spilled into the hallway. Next door, several dozen people wearing shirts emblazoned with messages in support of AEAs watched the hearing on a television set up in an overflow room. Every so often, the crowd burst into cheers in support of one of the pro-AEA speakers. In the hallway, a few children colored signs reading, "We Heart Love Iowa, AEAs, and support AEAs," because they treat people right, while others watched the hearing on their phones. Among those who gave feedback on the plan Wednesday were several parents whose children require special education services and have interacted with Iowa's AEAs. Geneva Dillon, whose 5 children have received services from the AEAs, told lawmakers that the plan would exacerbate gaps in the services and between students and districts, and she lamented that early conversations on the issue had lacked proper input from parents and educators. "I feel like that aspect of this conversation was completely bowled over by an out-of-state agency writing up something about a system that they don't even understand. And then Governor Reynolds just taking that and running with it," Dillon said. A parent from Urbandale, Pam Gronau, said that while she appreciates the services that her son receives, she was alarmed by her son's educational outcomes in math and other subjects. "I'm concerned with how much emphasis is put on my son's being put in a least restrictive environment," said Gronau, adding that she believed changes were often made to the system rather than based on the individual needs of the students. Iowa's AEAs received near universal praise among the district superintendents who spoke Wednesday evening, and as they acknowledged the work of the agency's thousands of staffers and key services they provide. But they were divided on the plan to restructure the agencies. While those who support the bill argued the dollars were best spent on districts to find their own services, others who opposed it expressed concern that smaller districts would suffer, while key services could be disrupted. Mark Lane, the superintendent for the Woodward Granger Community School District, said any restructuring plan that involves rapid change without proper input is doomed to failure. "When we rush change from the top in an effort to get rid of something that we perceive we don't want, the likelihood of getting something worse increases," Lane said. He said that he was worried whether services now provided by the AEA to students in his 1,000 enrollment district would remain intact and stable if the bill were to proceed. The head of College Community School District in Cedar Rapids, Doug Wheeler, called his district's partnership with the AEA the gold standard and urged lawmakers not to blame student achievement metrics on the agencies. But he said his district was not currently able to access all of the services available based on our needs. "I have a responsibility to our students and our families to engage fully in any conversation that might provide additional resources for students in an ever-changing educational landscape," Wheeler said. Several employees of area education agencies spoke against the bill Wednesday, including Stacy Warren, a Heartland AEA social worker who was on site in Perry shortly after the school shooting last month. She pointed to the AEA's capability to roll out emergency response teams and substitute teachers, infrastructure that she was doubtful that districts would be able to replicate locally. "Districts are not prepared and do not have the resources to handle these things alone," said Warren, who teared up as she addressed lawmakers. AEA staff, Warren said, were trained to address seemingly minor issues that impact families after traumatic events. Who's going to go to the school and say, did you remember to turn off attendance so that the students who died don't get their parents emailed to see if they're going to be there today? Warren said. Other staffers who work at AEA's attended the hearing Wednesday, frustrated by the process, advancing the bill and worrying of its impact if it becomes law. I think the legislation is going to be really, really damaging to Iowa's public education system for decades to come, said Taryn Butel, a school psychologist who works at Greater Prairie AEA. I think it's going to create damage that will not easily be repaired, even if they see the errors of their ways and try to go back and rebuild it. Under the House bill, AEAs would remain the sole provider of special education services for K-12 schools, but schools could choose whether to continue contracting with AEAs for media services and general education services under a fee-for-service structure, or get those services from a private provider. The House proposal would continue sending all federal education special education dollars directly to the AEAs rather than to individual school districts, as Reynolds proposes. State aid and property tax dollars that currently go to the AEAs would go to school districts under the House bill, but districts would be required to continue using AEAs for special education services. The bill also creates a task force to make recommendations on AEA properties, services, oversight, and staffing by the end of 2024. Dave?
And this story from page 2A of today's Register, the Iowa House passes a resolution declaring February 22nd, Caitlin Clark Day. This story by Stephen Gruber Miller. February 22nd is now Caitlin Clark Day in Iowa. The record-setting year for the University of Iowa's number 22 was honored yesterday in a resolution passed unanimously by the Iowa House. Clark broke the NCAA women's basketball scoring record during the February 15th game against Michigan, tallying 3,569 career points. In that game, she scored 49 points, the highest scoring total in Iowa women's basketball history. House Resolution 110 honors those records as well as Clark's many other achievements. Those include setting University of Iowa records for points scored in a season, 1,055, assists in a season, 327, and becoming the first player in NCAA history to have more than 3,000 career points and 1,000 assists. The resolution cites the two Big Ten championships won by the Iowa women's basketball team, as well as their 2023 national championship runner-up status. Be it resolved by the House of Representatives that the House of Representatives honors Caitlin Clark as one of the greatest collegiate athletes of all time and a prime example of the pinnacle of Iowa sportsmanship and athleticism, and eagerly awaits her future accomplishments, according to the resolution. It also says, be it further resolved that the House of Representatives honors Hawkeye Guard number 22, Caitlin Clark, by declaring February 22, 2024, as Caitlin Clark Day in the state of Iowa. Unfortunately, Caitlin and the Iowa Hawkeyes did not have a great game last night at University of Indiana in Bloomington. Indiana beat the Hawkeyes 86-69. They pretty well thrashed them. Clark was limited to 24 points, a great outing for anybody else, not necessarily for her, on 8 of 26 shooting by Clark from the field. So that is now the third Big Ten loss for the Hawkeyes. And so they're still an excellent team, but a rough night last night. Barb?
And I go to the Metro section here with the top headline being audit. 24K missing from Webster County. Ms. Tyler Jett, about $24,000 in cash is missing from the Webster County Public Health Department, according to the report that the Iowa State Auditor's Office released Thursday. Department employees told investigators that former Public Health Director Carrie Prescott kept a bank bag in her desk where workers placed the cash that the patients paid for immunizations and tuberculosis tests. Department employees were supposed to deposit that money with the county treasurer, but auditors determined that about $24,000 never went to the public coffers, according to the report. The county asked the auditor's office to review the department's finances after a doctor accused the department of improper billing. The auditors could not verify the doctor's accusation, but the review turned up other improprieties, according to the report. The department bills insurance companies for many of the immunizations and tuberculosis tests that it provides. But patients without coverage must pay the county before receiving the service. The department only accepts cash or checks, according to the report. Auditors reviewed reports that the department submitted to state officials showing how many shots and tests the county employees administered from July 2016 through May of 22. Investigators then calculated how much money the county should have received from uninsured patients. And based on this information, the auditors determined the amount of money that never went to the county treasurer. Prescott, whom the Webster County supervisors fired in May of 22 after an interval investigation, declined to speak with the auditors, according to the report, and also declined to comment to the Des Moines Register on Thursday. The auditors turned their findings over to the Webster County Attorney's Office, the Iowa Attorney General's Office, and the Iowa Division of Criminal Investigation. No charges have been filed in state court as of Wednesday morning. Webster County Attorney Darren Driscoll said in a statement that the county took swift action to investigate reports of alleged misconduct in the health department and assisted the office of the state auditor in their special investigation. In addition, the Webster County Attorney's Office contracted the Iowa Attorney General's Office and Iowa Division of Criminal Investigation to review the conclusions set forth in the state auditor's report and determine what action may be appropriate going forward. In addition to the money that went missing, auditors determined that a department employee received about $29,000 for providing family planning services, even though the employee did not complete required training. The federal government pays for the family planning services, and qualified employees are supposed to receive payment for the hours they work. The unnamed employee received about $102 an hour, according to the report. The auditor's report also reviewed other payments to Prescott from 2015 to 2022. The auditors determined that the county reimbursed Prescott about $16,000 for miles that she drove, even though the county does not have documents that show why Prescott needed to drive for the job. Prescott began working for the health department in 1997 and received a promotion to the director position in 2008. Webster County is about 75 miles northwest of Des Moines, and the health department's main office is in the county seat, Fort Dodge.
Casey's could replace a half-vacant Windsor Heights office building. Why are residents upset? This story by Addison Lathers. Residents fighting a new gas station in Windsor Heights have suffered a loss in their decades-long battle. Casey's General Stores aims to put a convenience store and gas station at 6961 University Avenue, just east across 70th Street from the city's Hy-Vee store. Windsor Heights Council Chambers were standing room only as the Zoning Board of Adjustment voted unanimously Wednesday night to approve Casey's request to rezone the property. The decision came after residents spoke in opposition to the plan, raising concerns about how the store would affect their property values and traffic, and the impact another gas station would have on the community. A come-and-go is located just to the west of Hy-Vee. Colleen Kelleher, a resident, said, "The majority of the residents don't want this. We want something that will enhance our city, that won't be open from 5 in the morning to 11 at night." The 1.25-acre lot is currently occupied by a 2-story office building that's more than 50 years old. According to the Polk County Assessor's Office, it's owned by the Colby family of Colby Interests, formed in 1947. The family-owned real estate development and management company developed as much as half of the residential property in Windsor Heights and owns the land that the city's Walmart Supercenter and Sam's Club occupy. The proposal would entail demolishing the existing structure and building a 4,200-square-foot convenience store. A report from city staff said the project would cost up to $5 million and that the sale of fuel, prepared foods, and other goods would produce significant property tax benefits to the city. Stephen Lowe, who has resided for 35 years in a house that backs up to the property, said, "I've seen a lot of change within Windsor Heights. I just ask you to remember that this is not Colbyville. This is not Caseysville. This is Windsor Heights, Iowa." The city's Planning and Zoning Commission will review Casey's plans in a meeting at 5:30 next Wednesday. After that, it'll be up to the city council in March to determine whether to approve the project. This isn't the first time a company has sought to put a gas station at the corner of 70th and University. Hy-Vee proposed to build a Fast and Fresh there in 2014, but residents beat it back. The then director of real estate for Hy-Vee, Rob Waddle, said the plan would have improved traffic by moving the store's access point on 70th Street to the north and adding more parking. Neighbors were not convinced, expressing concerns for pedestrian safety, noise, and fumes. Jen Strait, a resident, told the Des Moines Register at the time, "I don't want to see a town like some of our suburbs that are mostly strip malls and gas stations." The Windsor Heights Planning and Zoning Commission unanimously rejected that plan, and the City Council agreed. Hy-Vee later acquired a former Quick Trip store at 7220 Hickman Road in Windsor Heights and converted it into a Fast and Fresh. The following year, residents showed up in opposition to the Aldi store that would later be built at 7100 University Avenue across the street from Hy-Vee, a property also owned by the Colby Trust. Though some complained about oversaturating the area with big box stores, the plan eventually was approved in 2021. Brian Sheriff, president of Colby Interests, told the board that the Colbys have owned the property since it was farmland, long before the construction of the office building there in 1972. Since the COVID-19 pandemic struck in 2020, the company has struggled with vacancies at the building. Sheriff said, "In August of 21, we spent $47,000 on refurbishing and redoing the entire parking lot, both front and back, in hopes of retaining and attracting tenants to the property. Unfortunately, that effort was not rewarded." He said the building currently is less than half rented and doesn't generate enough revenue to cover maintenance expenses or the property taxes. The property also has seen a steady decline in its assessed value and is poised to lose even more in years to come. He said, "Over the past 2.5 years, we've been trying to figure out what we can bring to this site to redevelop that is an attractive use for the community and for Windsor Heights." He says that they had discussions with Chick-fil-A, Walgreens, and CVS. He said, "Of those options that were available for this location, we are thrilled to bring Casey's to this site." According to the report from Windsor Heights city staff, a convenience store and gas station would create between 25 and 35 full and part-time jobs. Justin Williams, owner of A New Look Windows and More and chair of the Windsor Heights Chamber of Commerce, spoke in favor of the Casey's proposal. He noted that other options for the property wouldn't provide the same stability or contribute as much to the city's tax base. Williams said, "I think redevelopment of the corner is inevitable. So whether you're for or against the Casey's, I think that something will change."
House Ethics Panel Tosses Complaint by Book Advocate. This is by Chris Higgins. The bipartisan Iowa House Ethics Committee voted unanimously on Thursday to dismiss a complaint accusing Representative Jeff Shipley of defamation. Sarah Hayden Paris of Johnston is the president and founder of Annie's Foundation, a nonprofit that opposes book bans and hands out free copies of books that have been challenged or removed from libraries. Hayden Paris filed a complaint January 31 accusing Shipley, representative of Birmingham, of breaking the Iowa House Code of Ethics and using social media of breaking the law by giving obscene material to children. Shipley's formal response called Hayden Paris's complaint politically motivated, without factual basis, and based on a difference of opinion over legislation. The bipartisan committee unanimously voted to dismiss the complaint with no discussion. It met for over just 2 minutes. Ethics Committee Chair Representative Andy Osmondson, Republican of Volga, told Radio Iowa that the complaint seemed politically motivated and that Shipley did not violate ethics rules. Hayden Paris said in an email to the Des Moines Register that she is extremely disappointed in the decision. I deserve to know what the reasoning was behind the decision to dismiss the fact that there was no public discussion on the matter does not give Iowans the level of transparency that we deserve from our government, Hayden Paris said. The fact that the meeting was over before many people even got logged in makes the whole process look like a sham. Representative Shipley's comments about me clearly meet the legal definition of libel. She said she is considering other options. In an email to the Register, Shipley said, I can only hope that Ms. Hayden Paris refrains from making harassing and provocative comments on social media moving forward. House Minority Leader Jennifer Confist, Democrat of Windsor Heights, told reporters Thursday afternoon that the Ethics Committee's decision was more of a technicality, since House rules would have only come into play if Shipley had been found responsible for libel. But she called his behavior incredibly troubling. I just want to say that the findings of the House Ethics Committee should not be in any way interpreted to mean that the House Democrats endorse Representative Shipley's behavior or the completely unprofessional and out-of-bounds treatment that he's made of a private citizen, she said. Hayden and Paris's complaint was rooted in a back and forth on X, formerly known as Twitter, where Shipley wrote that Hayden Paris was violating Iowa Code 728, which makes providing obscene material to minors a misdemeanor that should be criminally investigated. The thread began when Shipley posted about the possible restructuring of Iowa's area education agencies, saying the school districts should have more authority and flexibility over their own budgets. Hayden Paris, under the official Annie's Foundation account, replied, "But not the authority and flexibility for teachers and librarians to purchase the books that they see fit for their classroom and libraries, huh?" The thread continued from there. And Annie's Foundation wrote, "We're not scared of your pathetic attempts to smear us." The exchange between Shipley and Annie's Foundation was related to Senate File 496, the sweeping 2023 education law that restricts instruction about gender identity and sexual orientation through sixth grade and bans books depicting sex acts from schools. Shipley supported the law, which a federal judge has blocked and blocked the state from enforcing, while two lawsuits are pending. The back and forth also reflected ongoing debate over whether sexual images and passages from a book obscene make a book obscene and pornographic. Shipley took issue in the X thread and in a previous statement to the Register over a comment that Hayden Paris previously made with her personal account on Facebook that said, "Look, just cause it makes your naughty bits tingle doesn't mean it's porn." High-profile disputes over a handful of controversial books, such as the coming-of-age LGBTQ memoirs Gender Queer by Maya Kobabi and All Boys Aren't Blue by George M. Johnson, which both contain candid passages portraying sexual activity, prompted Senate File 496's book restrictions, which supporters have said aim to make school libraries age-appropriate and protect children from obscene content. In the thread, Shipley wrote that genderqueer is perverted and also violates federal obscenity law. But opponents of State File 496, such as Hayden Paris, have said the law amounts to chilling censorship and discrimination against students from underrepresented backgrounds. They say supporters falsely portray award-winning works of literature that could enlighten readers as obscure, as obscene, and pornographic. The definition of obscene material, Iowa Code 728 itself, says that the average person taking the material as a whole and applying a contemporary community standards with respect to what is suitable material for minors would find that the material appeals to the prurient interest and is patently offensive. Also, the definition says such material lacks serious literary, scientific, political, or artistic values when taken as a whole. Some organizers have pointed to Iowa Code 728 over books that felt were inappropriate for schools, including a group of residents who asked in December of 2021 for a Polk County attorney investigation over the presence of genderqueer and All Boys Aren't Blue in West Des Moines schools. But organizers on the other side of the issue say that the definition of obscenity does not apply to works of literature with artistic merit. West Des Moines school board members who addressed a formal challenge to genderqueer in March of 2022 took issue with the interpretation of the book as obscenity and voted to keep the acclaimed memoir on the shelves. Hayden Paris has said that there are no obscene books in Iowa schools and that books she has distributed, including Genderqueer and All Boys Aren't Blue, are not obscene or pornographic. Annie's Foundation has reported donating 5,000 books since fall of 2022, and the group recently announced plans to move into a dedicated office space and start a grant program. Senate File 496, which Governor Kim Reynolds signed in May of 23, preempts the issue by banning books depicted or describing sex acts from schools, regardless of context and without considering the work as a whole. While the state cannot enforce the law, while lawsuits continue, the districts are not required to restore the books that they have removed. After the law's passage, as they did before, families have the ability to challenge books that they feel are inappropriate in school and request that their children not be allowed to check out or read certain books. District officials and staff also have a discretion over what books they feel are appropriate or relevant for their students. The Des Moines Register documented nearly 500 unique book titles removed from schools before the federal injunction on state enforcement went into effect in late December. The books have included controversial queer memoirs, popular young adult books, classic novels, children's books with LGBTQ themes, and more.
Barb, I'll read two short updates from the Register online. First, on that breaking news we told you about a few minutes ago, the Register now has an update. Police are investigating a shooting that left two dead north of Des Moines this morning. The Polk County Sheriff's Office was dispatched to 5153 Northeast 17th Street regarding a person being shot at about 6:43 this morning. That's according to Captain Ryan Evans, a spokesperson with the Sheriff's Office. Two people were found dead at the scene. The shooting happened at a busy area just across from the Polk County Jail. Many witnesses were there and are being interviewed as of 8:40 this morning. Evans said, "We've got a lot of witnesses. It's kind of a busy business and park area, so we've got a lot of witnesses to talk to." Evans said there is no threat to the public. Second story updated on today's Register with the headline, "Iowa DNR seeks public assistance after fire damages the state's largest sycamore tree." The Iowa Department of Natural Resources is seeking assistance from the public after the largest sycamore tree in Iowa was mysteriously set ablaze on Sunday. The tree resides at Geode State Park near the southeastern portion of the state. Staff were alerted to the fire by a visitor, according to a news release from the Iowa Department of Natural Resources. The release says, although the fire was extinguished, the tree was severely damaged and its survival is uncertain. Andrew Cuckler, a park ranger at Geode State Park, said, "We're encouraging anyone who may have information about the fire to contact us. If you do have information, you can contact Cuckler at 319-392-4601. Callers can remain anonymous. That number again, 319-392-4601. Barb?
What can Iowans do to avoid being victimized by increasingly common imposter scams? This is by Lee Rude. The target audience for Tuesday's kickoff of a statewide Stop the Scammers campaign in Des Moines was clearly older Iowans, but the tips offered to avoid scams apply to everyone. A few important ones. Don't respond to urgent pleas for money by phone, even if the caller sounds like a family member. Call that relative at a number that you know and verify the situation. Don't send money to someone that you've never met in person, no matter how well you think you may know them. And don't answer calls or texts from unknown numbers. Add your number to the National Do Not Call Registry at 888-382-1222. That's 1-888-382-1222. Or donotcall.gov, all one word, donotcall.gov. Don't give out sensitive information such as credit card or social security numbers to people or companies if you haven't initiated the conversation. And don't be afraid to report fraud to local law enforcement or the Iowa Attorney General's Consumer Protection Division. Check out people trying to see investments or insurance by contacting the Iowa Department of Insurance and Financial Services. As imposter scams, particularly those using artificial intelligence, have swept the country, Iowa Attorney General Breanna Byrd and Iowa Department of Insurance and Financial Services and AARP Iowa launched the 18 Stop Fraud Education Campaign this week. AARP Iowa State Director Brad Anderson said scams using artificial intelligence, particularly those in which the perpetrators use the phone number or the voice of a grandchild, have been growing and have become incredibly dangerous. Such imposter scams have been the dominant type of fraud tracked by the Federal Trade Commission in Iowa for 9 years running, more than investor, online shopping, or other scams, Anderson said. Byrd said nothing makes her madder than seeing what scammers are trying to pull on Iowans to empty their bank accounts, including people impersonating U.S. Internal Revenue Service employees, police, and grandkids. She said that her office works with the prosecutors around the state when the perpetrators of imposter fraud are located in Iowa, but it can be difficult to prosecute offenders when they're not. Insurance Commissioner Doug Oman said that his office wants to gather evidence and detect investor fraud early, before people have been taken. Because once money has been stolen, it's more than difficult, he said.
The AFL-CIO plans a second union rally in less than a week at the Iowa Capitol. This story by Kevin Baskins of the Des Moines Register. For the second time in less than a week, union members plan to take their grievances directly to the Iowa Capitol. The Iowa Federation of Labor, AFL-CIO, is planning a rally in the Statehouse Rotunda at 3:15 Monday afternoon. Union President Charlie Wishman says about 100 union members are expected to turn out. He said private sector, building trades, public sector, manufacturing workers, and more will spell out how this legislature and governor's priorities need to change and how labor has a better vision for the future of Iowans. The news release from the AFL-CIO lists raising wages, restoring and expanding collective bargaining, overturning Iowa's right-to-work law, and fixing and improving the workers' compensation system in Iowa as some of the issues union members hope to highlight at Monday's rally. It also references union-busting allegations, which drew Teamsters Local 238 for a rally this past Wednesday outside the Capitol, where nearly 100 honking vehicles circled for an hour as a banner-towing airplane flew overhead. The Iowa Senate is expected to take up a controversial bill this week, the latest legislation in a years-long string under Republican legislative majorities to draw the ire of organized labor. The bill would amend legislation passed in 2017 that requires public employee bargaining units to hold a recertification vote about 10 months before expiration of their existing contracts, allowing members to say whether they want to continue to be represented by a union. It would close what Republicans describe as a loophole that enables an agency that doesn't want to require a recertification vote to avoid it and sign a new contract with the union by not submitting to the union a list of employees who are eligible to vote. Under this new legislation, if an employer fails to submit the list to the union would automatically be decertified and would have to go to court to force the filing of the list. One of the people attending Monday's rally will be Sarah McFarland, whose husband Robert was a guard at Anamosa State Penitentiary and was murdered in March of 2021 by inmates attempting to escape. McFarland has since advocated for changes in bargaining rights for correctional employees that would allow them to negotiate on health and safety issues. Current Iowa law only allows public employee unions to negotiate their wages. Wishman, the president of the union, said repeal of Iowa's right-to-work law is another of the goals being pursued by organized labor, pointing to the recent repeal of a similar law in Michigan in 2023. The right-to-work law allows workers to opt out of paying union dues despite holding union-represented jobs.
And now an item by Kevin Baskins. Wells Fargo has announced 36 more layoffs from its Jordan Creek Parkway campus in West Des Moines. The reduction of workers was reported by the Iowa's Worker Adjustment and Retaining Notification, or WARN, website. Although the layoffs were posted to the site on February 20, the effective dates of the job cuts began as early as January 23. The announcement brings the total reduction of Wells Fargo's Iowa workforce, as tallied through WARN notices, to 1,356 since 2018. We regularly review and adjust staffing levels to align with market conditions and the needs of our business, Wells Fargo spokesman Mike Schulzak said in a prepared statement. We work very hard to identify opportunities for employees in other parts of the company so that we can retain as many employees as possible. Where it's not possible, we provide assistance such as severance and career counseling, Slukark said, wrote. Wells Fargo's continued layoffs come as no surprise. The San Francisco-based bank's CEO, Charlie Scharf, announced in late 2023 that the company was anticipating severance costs of nearly $1 billion in the upcoming year. Overall, the company shed 11,300 jobs, or 4.7% of its workforce, in 2023, according to Yahoo Finance. Wells Fargo began laying off workers in the wake of a fake accounts scandal in 2016, when regulators accused employees of opening accounts without customers' consent or knowledge to meet corporate sales goals. The scandal brought extra scrutiny, resulting in more accusations of impropriety and record fines. According to a Des Moines Register analysis of the area's declining finance and insurance industry employment in recent years, adding to the headwinds was a slowdown in and a retrenching of Wells Fargo's extensive mortgage business, which is headquartered in Des Moines. In December, Wells Fargo sold the six-story West Des Moines building at 7001 West Town Parkway that once housed that division. It already had announced plans to vacate two of its three downtown Des Moines buildings, consolidating its workforce at the Jordan Creek campus. Only the legal department was to remain in the Central Business District. During a call with analysts in January, CFO Mike Santomassimo signaled the company would make more cuts this year. He said Wells Fargo set aside $969 million in late 2023 for planned actions on the efficiency side, and added that Wells Fargo will automate more work and upload more real estate. For years, Wells Fargo was the largest employer in the metro, reaching a high of 14,500 workers in 2017, slipping more recently to about 11,000. It has been surpassed by Hy-Vee, which has about 12,000 employees in the metro.
Moving to page 3C of today's Metro and Iowa News, man accused of receiving nude photos of minors. This story by Jose Mendiola. A Des Moines man was arrested and booked into the Polk County Jail Thursday morning for allegedly sending minors as young as 8 pictures of his genitals and asking them to take nude photos for money. 30-year-old Alexander Lee Hand, H-A-N-D, has been charged with sexual exploitation of a minor, purchase or possession of depiction of a minor in a sex act, solicit commercial sexual activity, and telephone dissemination of obscene material to minors. Hand allegedly used Whisper, an app where users can message each other anonymously, to talk to the minors. Court documents say Hand allegedly offered $500 to the minors to send him nude photos. Hand's wife made a report to the Des Moines Police Department after discovering several disturbing images and text messages in October of last year. Investigators found evidence of Hand talking to victims, including a 16-year-old and an 8-year-old. Hand allegedly received possession of a nude photo of an 8-year-old that he had requested. He is being held on a $50,000 bond and will have his first hearing on March 3rd.
Police investigate after bomb threat emailed to Des Moines high schools. Jose Mediola writes this. The Des Moines Police Department and school officials are investigating threats that were made to Des Moines schools on Thursday morning, the latest in a spate of such cases since the fatal shooting January 4 at Perry High School. Several Des Moines public school employees at several different schools, including 4 high schools, Central Campus and Virtual Campus, received an email that included a bomb threat, Phil Rader, a spokesperson for the district, said in statement. Police were notified and found the threat to be non-credible, Rader said. There were no changes to school schedules. The threats appear to be a hoax, and investigators found no proof of a real threat or a danger to staff or students of the Des Moines Police Department, said on a social media post. Unfortunately, threats of violence by email, phone, or social media have become a common form of harassment across the country, Rader said. Thursday's email is just the latest in a string of threats made to Iowa schools. On February 4, a bomb threat interrupted an Iowa High School Speech Association competition in Ankeny. Police later determined it was a non-credible threat based on interviews with the people involved. On February 9, a Pleasant Hill student faced terrorist threat charges for allegedly making threats toward a classmate. And on February 15, a person was taken into custody by police after school officials learned about a threat against South Hamilton High School in Jewell. The threats stated about a month after the Perry school shooting. Dylan Butler, a 17-year-old student there, shot and killed 11-year-old Amir Jolliffe, a student at the adjacent middle school, fatally wounded Perry High School principal Dan Marburger, and injured 2 other staff members and 4 students before taking his own life.
Des Moines photographer arrested on charges of exploitation and possession of child pornography. This story by Byong M. Byong of the Register. The owner of a Des Moines photography business, Wicked Imagery, was charged Wednesday in federal court with sexual exploitation of a child and possession of child pornography, according to a news release from the United States Department of Justice. 61-year-old Jeffrey Walter Gray, G-R-A-Y, allegedly had hidden cameras placed in changing rooms to capture pictures and videos of minors undressing. Investigators found a hard drive at Gray's home, which allegedly had child sexual material. The news release from the Department of Justice says Gray, from as early as approximately 2005 to at least approximately 2016, used minors to produce child sexual abuse material. Some of this material was allegedly created at the photography business Gray owned and operated in the Des Moines area called Wicked Imagery. Wicked Imagery, located at 4218 Southeast 22nd Street, appears to be operated home on the city's south side. Pin-up and boudoir photography, according to its website. It is run by Gray and his wife. Investigators have identified about 15 victims and ask anyone who believes they could have been a victim or the parent of a child who may have been a victim to visit their website or send an email to wickedimagery@fbi.gov. That email again is wickedimagery@fbi.gov. Gray's case is being prosecuted by the United States Attorney's Office for the Southern District of Iowa and investigated by the FBI with assistance from the Des Moines Police Department.